Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Let's have a chat and see how things go. Is that cool?
No problem.
So if you're welcome, should we put some mics on?
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
If you're happy to.
Yeah, I'm
sweet. Right.
Ready?
Yeah. Right. Jolyon, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, man. You?
Yeah, man. Really good. Oh, look, I appreciate you coming to join me. We've set up some FIFA that we're going to play in a bit, which is going to be awesome. The reason we've chosen FIFA, or you've chosen FIFA, is because it's something that you used to play a lot when you were playing, right?
Yeah, like borderline addictive. Probably really? Wasn't even borderline, it's probably just addictive. Yeah.
Was it popular in the dressing room?
Yeah, I think it still is now. I think everyone plays and has played to a certain degree. But I was like, it gets my attention. You know what I mean? So like playing and training was my attention, and then come home and then this was my attention.
Was it a way to switch off? Because like it's football, it's a game of football still.
Yeah.
But then I guess if it's not real life, it's a nice way to
It was a switch off in different ways. Like this is probably I probably get more emotional with this angry than an actual playing and training and stuff. Because again, you're in control of that side of things, where this is like, I know it's a game, I'm shouting at referees and players that I actually know I'm shouting at and stuff like that. So yeah, it used to get me angry, and to the point of where I had to come upstairs, whatever, I've played, I'd finish. My wife would go, "You just lost, didn't you?" And I'll be like, "Yeah." She's like, "I can just tell." I'm just like fuming. So yeah, it's a pretty emotional game.
It sounds like it winds you up more than it unwinds you.
Yeah. But again, it lets me vent, so I can't vent anywhere else. You know what I mean? So this was like my release. But if I've done, had a good weekend or a good series and that, I'm happy. Yeah it affects my mood.
Is there anything else you did to like unwind for your own mental health?
Unwind? Related to training, it would probably be like yoga, Pilates, again, unwind, but I knew they were helping as well, flexibility-wise. DJ?
Yeah,
DJ. It's funny that, because I didn't know, like, I knew I loved it, but I didn't know that they were so, I was going to compare them, playing and DJing, because played in a club, one of my first ones, and I seen the reaction of like the people on the dance floor, and it was like, yeah, that's what you do when you play. You're in control of someone's emotions, because everyone has their songs or a group of songs that take you to a place where you was, a special place when you was a kid or holiday. It's like seeing people react to stuff you're doing. It's like, oh, you're in control of someone's emotions. Kind of like playing, if you make a tackle or score a goal, it's like, yeah, it heightens
up. Well, it's like that emotional memory that you can like link a song to something special that happened.
Yeah,
can you remember particular emotions linked with your football, for example, then?
My biggest moment would be scoring for England. But I was probably calm then. Probably when, because I didn't score that often, I kind of was more aware. So rather than just get carried away in the moment. So stage of the game has an impact as well. The later you score or concede, that definitely affects how you feel more so. Because again, you're aware there's no time left to compete. So the kind of the last minute winner from Sergio was like, yeah, that was everything. That was like draining. You know what I mean? So there's probably the same thing has happened multiple times, but again, depending on the time of the game or the situation of the game, it affects your emotions differently.
How do you kind of deal with the pressure when you make multi-million pound moves to massive clubs, like when you move to Man City for 22 mil? I mean, that's a huge sum of money. And you're there. Yes, you're a proven player with, you know, the skills that you've already developed and your experience at your previous club. But then you've got the pressure of the fans, the pressure of management on you. How do you manage that expectation?
Yeah, I kind of simplified my thought process throughout my career, whatever it was. I just kind of had a simple approach and it was like, well, they've bought me for what I've done. They're expecting that. And it's just transferring that to the team you're now in. Yes, there's going to be times where you need to do different things, but they're not necessarily expecting that. They're expecting the minimum is what you've already done, and you've done it, so why can't you replicate that in a different kit? You know what I mean? So I was just kind of took that thought process of, as long as I'm doing this, these things, these are the basics I need to be doing, and if I'm doing that, then there shouldn't be many complaints. There's always going to be complaints because you're not going to execute every time, but I just kind of was aware of that thought process. It's kind of like I got injured early on in my career. And I kind of just had a thought, well, this is the list of stuff I need to do to get back to where I was before. If I get back there and there's no pain, then there's no excuse for me not to perform the way I was performing before. So it was just kind of like, well, that's that step. When you get there, then you apply that, and then that's the next step. So it's just kind of simple.
I mean, talking of that injury, because you brought it up there, you were out for a whole season. And that was when your club got promoted to the Premiership and you weren't able to play a single game that whole season. What's that like watching your friends and your colleagues out on that pitch? I know that you got relegated again, but like you weren't able to be out there. What's that feeling like of being excluded but out of your power?
But again, I'm aware of that. It was out of my power. Like I'd been injured. I'd never been injured before, so I didn't know how that was going to feel. I'd never played in the Premier League before, so I wasn't aware of what I was missing. It was kind of like I'm missing football. So the hurt was just not being able to train and play. In that year, I had my my eldest son. So again, it was there was different focuses. And I had to get fit. So it was enough for me to concentrate on anyway. But yeah, it wasn't kind of like, oh, I'm missing the Premier League. There was a couple of games where it was like, oh, we're playing Arsenal. It was like Bergkamp and stuff.
Yeah,
there's some legends of the game there.
Yeah.
But it was probably the following season when I got fit and we played Arsenal in the FA Cup at Highbury, and it's Henry and stuff, and then we lost 2-0, but I realised, oh, there this would have been fun.
Yeah,
like playing against these level players every week, and the scrutiny is different, like, you know what I mean, the kind of, it's a good pressure. It's what you play for.
You kind of thrive off that kind of high-pressure scenario.
Yeah, you enjoy it. You've got to enjoy it.
Because well, you have that's to, what, otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly that. And that's what you've been working hard for.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what about playing with, like, those massive players? Like, when you move to City, you're playing with some of the biggest players. And then when you play, for example, Man United, and you're in that derby, like, that is a pinch yourself moment, something you dream of as a kid.
Yeah.
And then you're playing these players that are so incredible. Obviously, you're on the same level as well, but it's just such a surreal moment.
Yeah, it's different. I think what I try to explain to people, and especially fans of football, it's like players are fans. They're just lucky enough to have made it, basically. That's my view on it. It's kind of like, well, we all want to make it when we're young, and no one's aware of it. It's a little bit different now. You're probably more aware of what's at stake and what you can achieve, because it's, again, it's documented a lot differently now. But growing up, it was just like, I just want to play. I just want to play football. I just want to wear a football kit on a Saturday afternoon. And it's that simple. And then you get to a level, it's like, well, you've done that now. So what's kind of, not next, but where's it changed to? Where's it moved to? And it's like, well, now you can achieve this and now you can achieve that. So as long as you find the formula that potentially allows you to achieve them things. As long as I've done them, whether I achieved them or not wasn't the goal. It was the process of, well, you know what's required. you're going to have to sacrifice or make these decisions based on this to get to this level. And if you do that and you don't quite make it, then your talent wasn't enough, which is okay.
Do you think to get to that top level, then there is a lot of sacrifice involved?
I use the word sacrifice then. And as I said, I never normally use it. I always say I never made one sacrifice. Mm. I made choices because when people say, well, did you have friends and stuff that kind of distractions? It was like, well, my friends never put me under pressure to do anything that they thought was going to hinder my career.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, well, they're going out and I'm going to train. It was like, well, I don't want to do that. So I wasn't sacrificing going out with friends because I didn't want to do it. I wanted to go to training and I knew if I went out, it was going to impact me the next day. So it wasn't a sacrifice. It was just a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really a choice because I wanted to do that way more than I wanted to do that. And again, going back to distractions and motivations, I kind of think, well, there's no good distractions and there's no bad motivations, is there?
For
you know what I mean?
For
it's kind of like whatever gets the best out of yourself, then use it to do that. Like when people talk about fame, money, cars, if that is your motivation, if you want to earn the most money, drive the best car, but it gets the best out of you, why can't it be used?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of the derby, should we dive in?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go.
I mean, I was saying to you earlier, I have not played FIFA in my life.
Ever.
Ever. So this is going to be interesting. Because now you're in the England coaching setup, right?
Yeah.
And how's that?
Yeah, it's good, really good. I never thought I would want to coach, should I say, but the enjoyment I get from it, it surprised me, I'm not going to lie.
And because you're working with the under 21s, so it's quite nice to work with kind of the up and coming.
Oh, yeah. I was lucky enough to have a kind of mentor or someone I knew wanted for me to do well growing up. So to kind of have that is important.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when you know that person's played as well.
Right.
That you're watching.
Best of luck.
Good luck.
I need it. We'll shoot.
Oh, wow. Is that hustling me, are you?
Yeah. This is
Circle.
I'm not shooting from here.
I will be.
So what's that like atmosphere in the dressing room like? Because there's a lot of camaraderie in terms of football. And there's a lot that we don't get to see. So what's that? Because you train together all the time. You eat together when you're at the training ground. What's that look like?
Depends again. It's, like you said, you spend more time with these people than, oh, that's not a surprise there, is it, Haaland?
Serious?
You spend more time with these guys than you do your family.
Really?
You know what I mean? Yeah, you hotel every night before a game.
Yeah.
Just 2-3 games.
Does it
a week.
Get lonely as a professional footballer?
It can be, but I was lucky, man. I've always got a lot of friends now that have lifetime friends like that I've played with, and so I was kind of lucky in that aspect. But yeah, it's not easy. It's not all glamour. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You see it all, and there's a lot of times where it's harder than what it appears to be.
I was trying to cross it. Well, she's trying to work out what to do.
It wasn't that. Go on, Jack.
So in terms of that mental health setup in football when you were playing, what did that look like?
Did it like exist? Anything? No.
Was it talked about at all?
No way. But again, I don't know if that's a bad thing. So when I first moved to Everton, obviously I was coming from Birmingham, coming from Wolves, but living in Birmingham home. And, good save. And I wasn't aware of what homesick was going to feel like.
Mm.
So I'd moved up to Manchester and it was like, ooh.
Yeah.
I can't just pop round to mum's and
do that. So did you have to find like your close circle or like you had to accelerate your...
I had friends and stuff, and my friends group is still the same. Like, as I said, it's added in due to players you've played with and you stay in contact, but like I still got my same group of friends that I grew up with. So that wasn't an issue, but there wasn't around. Obviously, everyone's got their own thing going on. And this was a big help.
Yeah.
Because when I moved up, it was the first year you could go online.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you could just play your pals from home, get the headset on.
Yeah, and literally stay in contact with them. So that was a massive thing. But at the time, I was like, oh, like this is really tough. Really tough. So
I was so bad.
But no one was talking about mental health. It was just, you were kind of soft. You know what I mean?
It's interesting like, now, though, when you are now aware of mental health, do you think that, you know, there were moments where you were like, that's what you were experiencing, but now you reflect on it, you're like...
Potentially. But again, I put it down to, like, sometimes if you're unaware of it, you can't then use it as an excuse. I'm not saying it is or it shouldn't be, but it was kind of like, well, just get on with it then.
Yeah, sure.
And it kind of made me stronger in a way. So if I was aware of it as a thing, all of a sudden, it's like, well, yeah, that is a real thing. So it is an added worry.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of that kind of dressing room vibe, obviously everyone is friends in that dressing room. I'd like to think, anyway.
No, you say that. I haven't got any stories that really weren't the case, but.
But
does
there's
everyone
a lot,
like anyone ever, at work? Does everyone work with someone?
True.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, just because you're playing, it's football. And, and I get that people assume that's the case because most fans are going to watch as a hobby. So they're going with their friends. So they associate it with that.
Yeah.
But that isn't always the case. You know what I mean? It's like if you've had a fallout with someone a season or months before, you don't get time to repair that.
Yeah.
2 years later, you're playing with that person. There's still a bit of needle. It still needs to be addressed. So
is there the equivalent of like an HR department? Depending on the manager, do you get called in like, right, boys, you need to sort this out?
Depends how seriously. The captains would do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you had Vincent Kompany, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because you had a formidable partnership in the middle with him at City.
Yeah.
And really I've heard he was a phenomenal captain and leader.
It's funny, yeah, because... He's, and I could see that. Vinny's what, 3-4 years? Maybe a bit more, younger than me. So, listen, when I went to City and he was 23, 24, I was aware he was a leader, 100%.
Mm.
But the captain that Vinny was at the end wasn't the captain that was there when I was arrived. Vinny wasn't even the captain. Carlos Tevez was the captain.
What?
Colo Torre was the captain.
And before that as well, it was like Stephen Ireland.
Yeah, but that was before. So yeah. We'd signed Colo Torre from Arsenal, who's part of the Invincibles.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So then we had Gareth Barry, who was coming from Aston Villa, who was a captain for Aston Villa for so many years. Nigel de Jong had played in the World Cup final. Patrick Vieira came. Do you know what I mean? So we had leaders. So, like, in the greatest respect to what Vinny become, like, they would have moulded him more than him needed to lead us as a group then because, like... We were ready to be that, and our age was pretty mature, should I say, our average age of that team. Like I said, it was coming from a place where people had established at their teams. You're not bad considering you've never played.
Right, I've got that vision, you know.
Here we go.
You pressed the wrong button. We're just playing for the half time, you know.
Oh, cool.
1-0 down, I'm going to take it. I might put it on my CV. So in that dressing room then, though, there's that competitive atmosphere as well, especially when it comes to, like, flashy stuff, I've got to say, surely. Was there not that competitive atmosphere?
Because you were there when
Balotelli was there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you must have a million stories about that, man.
About Mario?
Yeah. I mean, did he ever come in and go, you'll never guess what I did this weekend?
No.
No?
No, because we probably guessed.
You were probably there.
Documented. It's probably documented in the paper.
Yeah, true that.
But no, in regards to Mario, what's probably not realised with Mario is that he was 20, 21.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like, when you're 21, you let your hair down, right?
What? You should be able to.
Yeah.
Like, and he was coming from a foreign country.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was just like... And that was probably the start of when, like, a high-profile player, like, couldn't go anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, again, like, we had Yaya, David Silva... Sergio, but Mario he demanded all the attention. So you know what I mean? So it was kind of just had that. It's kind of like now it's with Jack Grealish and Haaland and Foden and Kevin De Bruyne. Like Jack, for whatever reason, he's got that attention, hasn't he? And that's kind of what Mario had. So it's different.
Do you think it's difficult then for footballers from a mental health perspective to manage that spotlight and pressure, especially from a young age as well? Because as you say, look at Jack Grealish. Since the Euros, he went massive, and then all of a sudden he went back to club football and he was getting booed by English fans. And for one summer, he was the English hero.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, how do you manage that?
Yeah, as soon as he went to City, it was kind of like,
well, now we can't like him anymore. It's kind of like, well, we got a boom. I was like, I don't understand it. But it's what comes with it. You got, players are aware that that's going to happen. But in terms of how you deal with it, everyone's different, aren't they?
Do the teams have, obviously, the press people at the club to help you manage the press?
Yeah, the press people. There's loads of support there now.
Yeah.
That's there if you want it. But again, it's still an environment where potentially deemed weak if you are having it.
Is it still? Yeah, so there's not that as much stigma.
Yeah, it's not as much. Nowhere near.
Why
as
do you
much.
Think that is?
I don't
because
know.
I look at a sport like rugby, and I know that because I've worked with a charity called Restart Rugby, and they've set up like a hotline for rugby players to call it anonymously who are really struggling with their mental health. And I think rugby started to break down the stigma. So I'm wondering why you think football is still got that stigma behind it with regarding mental health.
I don't know why. I just believe it has. Mm. Again, it's definitely breaking down the barrier of it. And it's not as, but the generation I came into, there's no way you could have suggested there were things. And there's no way. You just would have been weak. You're mentally weak. Like, and if you're deemed mentally weak, you're not able to perform. So players had to be quiet about that.
I mean, I guess a word that would come to mind is headstrong.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Literally that. You
especially
had to kind
that
of just,
era
yeah.
you came into.
Yeah. I was lucky because my brother was like 4 years old that he played. So I was aware of what was coming. And anyone that's played, that physio room, that dressing room can be toxic. If you're not
really
have thick skin at certain times, everyone's going to hold something. At certain times, so you kind of need to be aware that if it's your day, in regards to the banter and all that stuff,
just maybe, wear it.
Yeah, you're gonna have to. You can't always be looking to complain. And there's obviously things that come up, and you're like, nah, that's too far, 100%.
Sure.
But that's anywhere.
Yeah.
But in regards to when it's your day, just know that it's tomorrow. It's gonna be someone else. And that I'm not saying that's okay.
Yeah.
But there still has to be a resilience within you that can understand. That can understand.
I think there's a definite line.
Wow,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Exactly. I mean, in any place. It's again, like friends, when you go to the pub and you're like having a chat and the banter gets going and then you know when it's too far and
yeah,
you go,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
well, hang on.
When someone says a joke and no one's laughing.
Yeah,
it's like,
and you're
yeah,
like,
it's too much.
You're like, anyone else need to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, we've got too far.
Right, I need to talk to you about the World Cup.
Yeah.
Because it's in Qatar. And that's like, obviously a massively contentious topic of discussion. And the first thing that we can talk about is how Qatar won the World Cup. And I say won in inverted commas, potentially. I mean, my first question about that is, do you think it was all above board?
I don't know. I honestly don't know to have a valid opinion. Do I think it's been done any different to any other World Cup or selection processes? Probably not.
Mm.
So that's where I would judge it and say, what have they done that others probably haven't?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look at this World Cup as well and you just think they've spent 200 billion and that's eye-watering. I think the biggest World Cup before that was about 7 billion or something.
Yeah, but they had zero.
No, I know.
So if you,
in terms of infrastructure.
I bet if you calculate what that them other nations had in place and what it cost them, I bet it's not far.
Yeah. I mean, another thing that we look at with Qatar, and we talk about the One Love armbands, and we can talk about what Germany did as well, and how FIFA stopped the England team from wearing the armbands. And it's all surrounding those human rights laws in Qatar. Do you think it's right that these big organisations are allowed to put a foot down on freedom of speech?
I think it's harsh that it always falls on the players.
Mm.
They have to then be the ones to showing the protest, and then they're the ones that are getting judged when it's not allowed to happen. I think it could be a simpler process. Like, if there's a topic of discussion, the World Cup starting in November the 1st, say. Everybody knew it was starting then. Well, everyone then should have up until September the 1st to document what you want to do to protest against that issue. And then it gives FIFA, the governing bodies, a chance to understand why, and then then they can say, well, no, or yes, we kind of want or don't want that to happen. Where I just think it was so late in the day that FIFA was like, they hadn't, like, I think that was documented like 6 months ago, they were going to wear the armbands.
Mm.
And then the night before the game, you chose to say no. And you said you reprimanded it with a yellow card. I was like, how is that fair? So there's a way that that could have been handled a lot better from FIFA side. It could have been 4 weeks ago. No, we don't want you to do that. Well, we'll find another way to kind of make it awareness or draw awareness to it. So I just think there's always going to be something. It's always going to fall on the players, which I don't always think is fair. And I just think the process of how it's handled from both sides could be done differently.
I mean, it's important to stand up for what you believe in. And even though it wasn't to do with the armbands or anything, you know, the German team still put their hands over their mouths to symbolise whatever they wanted to express. But that still got negative press. You know what I mean? It got positive press and then negative press as well.
Yeah.
Because
you're never going to... We all have different opinions. So you're never going to keep everyone happy.
Mm.
And that's that, on any topic. Mm. He's never going to go to a stadium and make one gesture. That's even with the kneeling. Like, there's fans that weren't happy with that. For what reason? Like, but again, whatever it was to them, it meant something different. So it's always going to be a case of where you're gonna upset someone. And I just, what I worry about is how then the counter protests happen. If like, what if you're not happy, if it's not hurting you, why does it matter? You know what I mean? If it's not affecting you, like Germany doing that, it wasn't hurting anyone. So why the negativity around it? I don't understand. That's what I don't understand. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I just
think when it comes to that freedom of expression thing, I just still can't get over the fact that ultimately it's just a game of football. I understand that actually then there's billions of pounds involved with it, and then there's multiple organisations around the world and some of the biggest people in the world involved. But it's a game of football that is going to be watched by billions, so they can highlight something that's so important, especially when it comes to the fact that homosexuality in this country is illegal.
Mm.
And I just don't know how an organisation is comfortable standing up for something not to be expressed. Purely, not even to say that they're defending or fighting against it, but they're allowed to have an opinion. That's what the armband is. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I'm saying. It should be allowed to voice their opinion or their protest. And as I said, I'm sure it probably would have had less... probably less press. If they was wearing their armbands, it just would have been that. There wouldn't have been a topic of discussion about them not wearing. It just would have been, they're wearing their armbands. So is it a negative thing that it's happened, that it's drawn more attention to the topic? I don't like the topic is whether or not they're wearing the armbands. The topic is the human rights and the issues they have there. But again, there's issues everywhere.
Yeah,
like there's the states, the next World Cup is in what, Mexico, Canada and USA. There's some sure the states there that same-sex marriage is illegal.
Mm.
Do you think the scrutiny would be the same?
No, of course it won't be.
You know what I mean? So
it's
when it's convenient for whoever's making the decisions.
Mm. I think people went into this World Cup wanting to pick holes in it regardless. Do you know what I mean?
I think they do that with every World Cup. I think there's more holes this World Cup. And again, this was given to Qatar, what, 10 years ago? And just now we're just finding the need to be so kind of vocal with the protests. Not us as in England, just everyone. I'm like, we knew 10 years ago this was happening.
Yeah.
Like, surely something could have been done within that time.
Mm.
Do you remember this being a topic 5 years ago?
No, of course not.
Like, why? Yeah. Then again, it's relevant now because it's happening, but in regards to preventing it from going ahead or making it a bigger issue, it could have been done prior to this, to the players having to fall on their feet.
Yeah, for sure. Should we kick off second half?
Let's go.
Right, is there a forfeit?
If I don't score?
Yeah, for me, yeah.
A forfeit, I don't know. I didn't expect you to score, to be fair.
I don't need it. I don't even know how to tackle yet.
Zero and square.
Oh, I just keep changing player. Right, something I want to talk about with you is referees and the culture towards referees, because I'm going to bring up rugby again, because the culture and respect towards referee and rugby, as you know, you've seen it, it's that they treat them strictly and it's almost like you call them sir, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there this culture of towards referees in football that's just involves rudeness and expletives and that kind of attitude.
Is it because the referees in all the sport of rugby has always been the case from such a young age?
Mm.
So
okay, so maybe my question is then, how can we change the culture towards a referee? If you say you swore at a referee in football, do you think that could be a yellow card? Or should be? Or is that...
I don't swear, though.
So. No, I'm not
yeah,
you.
I know, yeah,
do you know what I mean? But like when you watch on TV and you go, and you this see, is a game for...
Well, I know referees that are sort of players.
Right, okay.
So, as you said...
Because in rugby as well, you get mic'd up.
Yeah. Which, again, I understand. Does that make it a better spectacle or more entertaining? Do you only hear the referees in rugby when it's...
No, it's on all the time.
It's on all the time, but when... So you can hear them at any given time?
Yeah.
I don't know if that works in football. I don't think everything is transferable.
Sure. I
think that definitely could be worked on. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
So you do agree that there's maybe something
wrong
with that.
Definitely.
With the way, but I suppose I guess I don't see the other side of it in the way that referees react to others.
Yeah. It's not every referee and it's not every player. So
yeah.
That's what it is. I think I was having this discussion yesterday. Football is probably the only sport where one bad incident and it's every footballer.
Yeah,
every footballer is the same.
Mm.
Like, even just then when your question was about Flashy, he was like, was it a competitive nature? But what, because of Mario?
Yeah, sure.
Deemed to have a nice car, but... I'm sure there's rugby players with nice cars, but the perception of rugby players isn't
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And I've got rugby players as friends. I'm close with Hugo Monye and
yeah.
And I know Danny Kerr. And we was away one time when we was away in Vegas. And we were having a conversation about what they was getting up to in Vegas. And we was like, what? Like, there's no way we could do that anywhere.
Really?
Like, and they were saying, yeah, we can just
go on. What happened?
No. It wasn't nothing like horrendous, but it was just like, oh, that's
if you
okay.
got seen doing that,
no way.
Like football, the backlash would be.
Oh yeah, we're tarnishing football if we're doing that. I mean, where they're just enjoying themselves, which they're right to, but footballers don't have that same grace.
So I guess it comes back down to that, you know, perception and pressure of the spotlight. Because again, now I guess we've got to say that, you know, football is the biggest sport in the world.
Yeah.
And there's this expectation of you to be this role model 24/7. But when you look at Mario again, he's 21.
This kid here, Phil Foden, like...
Yeah, right.
He's from Stockport. How can we expect him to have the answers to everything life is going to throw at him at 22?
Yeah.
Yeah, footballing-wise, he may have them answers, but... He's a parent now.
Is he?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Two kids. So, he's navigating himself and having to do that. I just don't get how we can just expect that to be... Well, he can't make any mistakes. He's not allowed to because he plays football. But if he was a 22-year-old boy that didn't play football, man, that didn't play football, he'd be like, yeah, I understand that. I understand why he wanted to do that and want to find out what that looks like.
So let's look back to you when you finished your playing career and then you transitioned into coaching and everything else that you do now. What was it like changing that routine? Because you had spent years.
Yeah. That was the hardest thing I'd done. Like, I underestimated how important the routine was, my routine.
Do you think that routine was essential for your well-being?
Yeah. I know it was. I wasn't aware of it at the time. Like... When I start playing and... So I'd gone to school at 5, left school at 15, gone to start to play football at 15, and then at 35, I'm retiring from playing. And you got to think, so for the 30 years, I've been told what time to be somewhere and what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
30 years. And the 5 years before that, I don't really remember anyway. You know what I mean? So it was like, oh, now I've got my own time. So... My family's life didn't really change. The kids had to go to school. My wife did her daily routine and it was like, oh, I'm on my own a lot more than I was kind of used to. So.
Oh, what are you doing?
Oh, nice. You'd think you're winning.
No.
Yeah.
So in regards to being aware of that, that was really hard. That was probably the hardest moment, like, for me as an individual and a parent and a husband. It was like, ooh.
Did you have a woman? What did you experience?
A different emotion I hadn't felt, and it was long lasting. I wasn't depressed.
Was it just like,
but I was aware that it was a real thing. No, it wasn't even empty. It was just like, what now? I'd achieved more than I'd set out to achieve. So it was like, well, what is there to do now? What is there to do?
So when you were playing, did you ever have this thought process of what is next? Or did you always just, when you're in the moment and playing, you never really think about that?
Yeah, I didn't want to think about that. I didn't want to think about what was next, because then it meant I wasn't going to be playing. Even though I knew it was happening,
yeah,
I just thought, why focus on that?
Well, I mean, it's amazing now, because you left school, if I'm right in saying, you didn't leave with any GCSEs.
No, nothing.
And you're now doing a master's degree.
Yeah, I graduate.
And you've done it. Oh, congrats.
Yeah, I graduate.
And how was that, though? Because that must have been challenging for you, right?
Horrendous. I'm dyslexic. So school, especially when I was at school, you only learnt one way, didn't you? You were kind of like...
It was black and white, right?
Yeah, you had to read. You had to read. And reading was the worst thing for me.
Really?
So... I don't absorb information that way.
So I assume by that you just hated school.
I didn't hate school. I enjoyed school because, again, friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way, like, you were taught, I hated that. And, like, I was with, it was called the, like, special teacher then. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't any other way to learn other than read. I'm thinking, well, I struggle to read, though. So what has to happen now? But obviously now with the learning tools you have, like... the audio format to learn. There's so many different things and ways you can do it, and visual. And I was like,
definitely.
If these was at school, I would have enjoyed it way more. I would have learned a load more, but that wasn't the case. It was just like, this is the only way you can do it.
Yeah.
It's the only way it's done. And it was like, well.
So it was when you were growing up then, did you feel like the only option was football? Was that your kind of out?
Oh,
or the
I
way to you. Save yourself? Was that the only job you foresaw?
Oh, yeah. So, again, I don't know if you had it at your school. We love work experience.
Yeah, of course.
So, cause I don't think they do it now. I don't think it's done. So, you go to a workplace of where your career may, you may go have a career.
Yeah.
I went to play football.
Wow.
I went to Wolverhampton Wanderers for 2 weeks. Work experience. Good game. Yeah. So, I went there for 2 weeks. And then by the end of that time, so that was year 11, maybe?
Yeah.
Start of year 11. So by the end of that time, they wanted to sign me.
Wow.
So I knew at the end of that, I would have had at least 3 years.
Yeah.
It was 2 years, YTS it was called then.
Yeah.
And a 1 year pro. So for the next 3 years after school, I was going to be playing football.
Yeah.
So that kind of was sole focus now. It was like, yeah, I have to come. And I always went to school. I never not went or wagged what it was called then.
Yeah.
It was
kind
of like, I was aware of, as much as I didn't want to go, there's going to be times in life you're going to have to do something you don't want to do.
Mm.
And I was just getting used to that. So that's what I was using it for. I was getting used to being on time. Someone's asked me to do something, you try. If you can't do it, you can't do it, but you try. And then I knew that was going to help me, because when I get to an environment which I love and I want to be at, it's going to be even easier.
Yeah. So you're trained almost.
There you go.
You've got to train the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's what I was kind of preparing for without being aware at the time. But that was just a thought process. Even at 15, I was like, well, I know I need to be there, so I might not enjoy it, but I know I need to do it. And then coming to football, I was like, I want to be here.
Yeah.
I can be there earlier and stay later, kind of thing. So that was.
So in terms of the future then, you've got your coaching, and you I mean, you're like a busy, busy person. What's the kind of your goal for the next 5 years?
Ooh, so again, plan-wise was retire, do a variety of things for 5-6 years, which I've been doing and enjoying. Again, people that I trust their opinions have said to me to do that, say something called stick. You'll do something that you enjoy more than others. And that's kind of happened. There's been things I've done which I've kind of filtered away from. But also know I want to help a younger generation. So in order to do that, that's more of an admin role within the football, and you need certain qualifications. It's not just a coaching badge. So I'm working towards them kind of things now. So the next few years, it's more qualifications. So when I do apply for jobs, the excuse isn't, oh, you need to get that, you need to get that. It's kind of like,
You've got it.
And I've played for 20 years. So the people that you're potentially employing before have, can't go back and get 20 years playing. We can all get the qualifications. And as I said, we can all learn the same things. But then I think my experience as a player will help me deliver them differently. Because if you relate it to coaching, like Pep would have been on the coaching course with how many other coaches?
Yeah.
So why are they the same? It's because the way he delivers them and the way he's as a person has allowed him to deliver what he's saying, his message and thought process, and his experiences have helped him to do that. So that's kind of the way I'm thinking should help me.
Hopefully. Man, that sounds exciting. And I think You've got a really calm demeanor. I think for a coach, that's nice. Because sometimes you see, like, when I listen to some people talk about Harry Redknapp and seeing how much he can blow, I'm like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, but again, it's different, though. I think this, in terms of my demeanor, I think it's probably more relevant to this generation of players and youngsters.
Mm.
Again, I've, like, my kids, I'm aware of how them, that I don't think this generation reacts to shouting and screaming where mine did. There's some players that was fear, so you performed out of fear, which is again isn't a bad thing. So it's just being aware of what drives individuals, and I think there's more individuals now that need an arm around them, want an arm around them. But if you genuinely want people to do well, it allows you to then scream and shout and they don't hold it against you, they don't take it personal. It's like, I know he cares, but this moment needed this and required this, so that's the goal.
And again, you mentioned there as well, I mean, talk about bringing up the next generation as a father. What's that experience like?
As a dad?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Because again, it's new. It's new. So I've got three kids. Oldest is coming to 19. My youngest son was 15 the other day, last week. And then my daughter's 9. But because they're all so different, it's like I'm just learning something different all the time. So.
And I'm just guessing here. I assume they don't all just love football, and they enjoy their own things. And you're that's awesome.
Well, they do. They enjoy their different things.
Yeah.
But like my boys play. My daughter wants to play. She plays netball, but she's probably the most active out of them all. She's probably the most athletic. Mm. But again, I'm dad. I don't want to be their coach. Like I would never risk that relationship with them. So. If they want to make it and they only want help, cool, I'll give it to them and I'll help them along the way. But like, I just want them to be who they want to be rather than me being here. Because again, I'll go to games and I see parents that probably want it more than the kids want it. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And that was never the case for me. So again, my parents and my brother never risked our relationship based on how far they think I could have gone. It was like, well, you don't want to do it, then just don't waste our time. And that's kind of me with the kids. It's like, if you don't want to go, it's fine. I just don't want to be going out the house 3, 4, 5 times a week. If you don't want to go, it's cold out there. You know what I mean? So it's probably why I don't want to coach as well, because it is cold. So I'm just like, let's not waste time.
Yeah.
And if we can enjoy it along the way, then great.
Right. My final question I ask every guest is, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
In one word, I just thought then it's probably resilient then, but now when I'm thinking about it, I would say aware, being very aware of what is needed at any given time. I think we associate the word strong with just being tough, but I'll just say being aware, because sometimes it's being the shoulder to cry on that is the strongest one. You know what I mean? It's not always a case of being the toughest man in the room, just for me being aware.
No, I think you're headstrong for sure.
Thank you.
Mate, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
No problem, thank you.
Top man.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.